latest world news headline.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Nigerian police say at least 18 are dead, 22 others injured, after three suicide bombers attacked a crowded fish market near the northeastern town of Maiduguri late Friday. The suspected suicide bombers struck about 25 kilometers southeast of the Borno State capital. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attacks in Borno State, which has been worst hit by the Boko Haram insurgency. In the wake of a probe into Russian meddling of the 2016 presidential election, Special Counsel Robert Mueller has indicted 13 Russian nationals and three Russian companies.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller laid out the most detailed allegations yet of Russian interference in the U.S. election. The 37-page indictment says the Russians, beginning in 2014, used fake social media posts and advertisements to sway opinion in favor of then-candidate Donald Trump. 12 of the defendants worked for the Internet Research Agency, a Russia-based company that carries out influence operations on behalf of Moscow. But the indictment does not accuse Trump campaign officials of participating in the scheme. Trump has called the Russia investigation a hoax and a witch hunt led by his political opponents. He's also repeatedly rejected or downplayed accusations that Russia interfered in the election. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. Attorney General is now ordering an immediate review of how to respond to warnings about potential mass killings. The action follows an FBI admission that it ignored a tip about the gunman who recently killed 17 people and wounded 14 others at a school in the state of Florida. President and Mrs. Trump visited Friday with the victims of that shooting. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. The Commerce Department continues to urge President Donald Trump to impose tariffs or quotas on aluminum and steel imports from China and other countries. Unveiling the recommendations Friday, Secretary Wilbur Ross said in a case of both industries, the imports threaten to impair national security. Ross mentioned as an example that only one U.S. company now produces a high-quality aluminum alloy needed for military aircraft. China's Commerce Ministry has said that the report was baseless and did not accord with facts. A military helicopter carrying two Mexican government officials crashed Friday during a tour of earthquake damage, killing two people on the ground. The earthquake struck southern Mexico Friday, causing minor damage in the state of Oaxaca. But there were no immediate reports of injuries or deaths. The capital, Mexico City, in the south of the country is still recovering from earthquakes in September that caused widespread damage. Germany is now welcoming home a journalist who spent a year awaiting charges in a Turkish prison, while the very same court on Friday sentenced six other journalists to life in prison. Deniz Yücel, who holds a dual citizenship in Germany and Turkey, is back there. His legal ordeal is not over. Turkish media report he was released pending trial, as the court handed down an indictment accusing him of spying on behalf of Germany. The two Swiss freestyle skiers who contracted norovirus at the Winter Olympics have recovered and have been cleared to return to training. The two were the first athletes at the Games confirmed to have been hit by the highly contagious virus that causes stomach issues. Turkey has proposed to the United States that Syrian Kurdish YPG militia withdraw to east of the Euphrates River in Syria, and that Turkish and U.S. troops be jointly stationed in another area. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on a two-day visit to Ankara. He met with his Turkish counterpart for talks and then spoke to reporters.
Our two countries share the same objectives in Syria: the defeat of ISIS-Daesh, secure and stable zones, an independent and unified Syria. We recognize the legitimate right of Turkey to secure its borders. We take it seriously when our NATO ally Turkey says it has security concerns. As to Afrin, we call upon Turkey to show restraint in its operation to minimize the casualties to civilians and avoid actions that would escalate tensions in that area.
Turkey launched an air and ground assault last month in Syria's northwest Afrin region to drive the YPG from the area south of its border. Anger is upset over Washington's support of the YPG, the top U.S. ally in the fight against the Islamic State group. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
There are two side robbers that went to one of the fish markets popularly called as Kasson City in Kwandiga.
Three suicide bombers attack a crowded fish market in Nigeria.
She is ready to come. She will let me know, and I will inform the nation and post the world at large that the religious man is coming home on such a day. But as of now, those are just reports, just like any other report.
The spokesman for the Malawian Opposition People's Party dismisses reports that former President Joyce Banda plans to return home next month.
They're talking about the legitimacy of the president, and then in the DR Congo, they're also talking about Kabila should go, but he's staying on in power.
And the Congolese President Joseph Kabila arrives in Zambia Saturday for bilateral talks. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Nigerian police say three suicide bombers attacked a crowded fish market near the northeastern city of Maiduguri late Friday, killing at least 18 people and wounding some 22 others. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attacks in Borno State, which has been worse hit by the Boko Haram insurgency. Maiduguri, the birthplace of the extremist group, has been a frequent target of attacks by the Islamist group, which has killed more than 20,000 people since 2009 and forced over 2 million to flee their homes. For more, I reach Haruna Dauda, VOA's Hausa Service reporter in Maiduguri.
It has happened in one of the local governments called Kwandiga. Local government is far away, 30 kilometers away from Maiduguri. It is a local government on itself. So I equally talked to the PPRO of the Nigerian police. He has confirmed to me that there were two suicide robbers that went to one of the fish markets popularly called as Kasson City in Kwandiga, inside Kwandiga Sound, and exploded the bomb in them and killed 18 people and also injured 22 persons.
Now, did any group claim responsibility for the attack?
Nobody for now claim any responsibility whatsoever of that attack, but actually that's the usual attack that are being carried out by suspected members of Boko Haram all the time. So many people think that it is Boko Haram that, detonated that or sent this kit to the public and detonated bomb in them and killed just innocent persons like that. And this incident happened around 8:30 at night yesterday.
What have the police been saying about this latest attack?
Yes, police are saying they are doing their best. They went there immediately when this incident happened. They evacuated the injured ones, including the dead bodies. They took them to the mortuary and also provide security around that area. So they are there doing their work as usual, but they are also asking the public to inform the police whoever they see or the suspect, running about the street without knowing him or getting his full identification, that he should be reported to the police so that they will take a preventive measure about it.
What has been the reaction of people living in the area? You've spoken to some people following the attacks. What have they been telling you?
Yes, I spoke to one of the persons residing in Kwandiga town who actually confirmed the incident to me that what he told me that it was three suicide bombers, not two as the police reported. And so also he told me about 20 people died yesterday, which is more or less the same of what the police gave me. And he said that even one of the military personnel, he was among those who killed by this suicide, because he went there at night to take, that is a local retailer inside this bucket, so he was there to take tea. Unfortunately, this suicide also, killed him, killed others also at that time, at that material place.
Haruna, some Nigerians are saying the security agencies are not doing enough, since they have known that Boko Haram militants often attack markets, soft targets in market areas. Why don't they increase security in the area? When you spoke to people,
What did they tell you about some of these concerns?
Yeah, actually, the issue of attack has reduced drastically, unlike before. And most of the people, most of the Nigerians appreciate the effort of Nigerian teams because initially you had bomb almost every day. There was a time I was in Maiduguri, almost every day you had an attack here or there, marketplace, worshipping place, mosque or churches. But it appears that this issue has reduced drastically. It will check. This is the first attack in Kondiga town in this year. This is the first attack, so one cannot actually say the cities are not doing their best. But you know, the numbers of security we have in Nigeria cannot be everywhere to protect all the citizens. And this thing, since these are the attackers or the bombers, while they are here, this is their mission. They must at least sometimes outsmart the security to carry out their nefarious activity.
What assurances are the police giving to the population following this attack?
Yes, they give people assurance that they will continue to protect them. And also, as I said earlier, ask the public to be informing them to any person they saw or seen passing or may have been suspected as a Boko Haram member or any one of the foreigners. He or she should also inform, because they are saying they cannot do it alone. So the public must ask them by giving them information so they can equally do their work as well.
Haruna Dauda is reporter for VOA House Service. He spoke with me from Maiduguri. Meanwhile, the Nigerian House of Representatives has unanimously adopted a motion to stop the importation of vehicles for official use in the country. It has also urged President Muhammadu Buhari's government to develop a policy and provide a timeline to make it compulsory for ministries, departments and agencies to restrict procurement of cars to those manufactured or assembled in Nigeria. The lawmaker has also asked a committee to investigate why automobile companies in Nigeria collapsed and come up with solutions. To learn more, I reached legislator Abdul Razak Namdas, who is also the spokesman for the Nigerian House of Representatives in the capital, Abuja.
No, we wanted to strengthen Nigerian products. For example, if there are made in Nigerian vehicles, the labor market should also be patronized. Government agencies should also pay attention to maybe Nigerian vehicles, and that will also improve, generate employment for our workers, and it will keep the companies going. But that does also suggest that we are banning completely. There are vehicles that are allowed to come inside, but we want to encourage local production also.
The House of Reps asked the federal government to develop a policy and provide a timeline to make it compulsory for ministries, departments, and agencies to restrict procurement of cars to those manufactured in Nigeria. How pragmatic is this, and how soon do you expect the government to respond?
You know, we have the procurement processes in Nigeria. We are even working on the procurement law to reduce the period, because it takes time for some of the procurement procedure to mature before contracts are awarded. We are even working on reducing the number of months from 6 to 3 months. But in line with our budgeting process, we have asked government agencies to please ensure that they make their procurements on time, so that locally manufactured vehicles can also benefit. Because by the time you allow locally manufactured vehicles to be patronized by government agencies, other stakeholders and other Nigerian businessmen will also patronize, and the economy will grow. Don't forget, we just get out of recession not quite long ago. And part of it is to ensure that we have to reject the economy by patronizing our own products.
Does Nigeria have the capacity to produce and meet the demands of parastatals and government functionaries and offices based on the amount of cars being produced in Nigeria or assembled in Nigeria, particularly when the production, as they said, seemed to have collapsed?
No, to be fair to everybody, I wouldn't say that we have the capacity to produce 100%. We don't have that, but we have to start somewhere. It is just because they are not being patronized so much, and that is why attention of Nigerians gets to other vehicles that are produced outside. But by the time you patronize them, they will grow gradually, and we will get the capacity to be like any other bigger company. But it's because we don't look inwards. We always look from outside, and that is why
these companies will not grow. So we are not expecting any magic that they will grow overnight. But they need to be patronized, and with time, they will grow and get to the level we are hoping that they will.
Some of your colleagues expressed concern about Nigeria allegedly being a dumping ground for automobiles manufactured on foreign soil, unlike in the past when car manufacturing companies flooded the country. Some people are saying this is mere nostalgia and that the House of Reps and the government should focus on building capacity and making sure that it could meet some of these needs rather than coming out with a blanket statement of nostalgia. What do you say to that?
No, but I agree with you that there are these concerns that have been raised. This concern is continual. Nigeria is a developing nation like any other developed African nations that are developed. These are part of it. But we have a feeling that even recently we adopted a motion that apart from all cars should come from normal routes, we should block some of the leakages, for example, some of the porous borders that these vehicles come through porous borders without actually even paying the necessary taxes and what have you. It should come through the normal and official places, come through the sea and what have you. All this is done in order to correct the wrongs that have been going on for long in Nigeria. So I think we are moving somewhere.
Some people say that this will be difficult to achieve because Nigerians like their foreign cars. How do you combat that?
Let me say that it's not only in Nigeria that foreign cars are required. Other African countries, too, have that same kind of thinking. But what we are saying is that we will not stop foreign cars completely to Nigeria. But what we are saying is that by the time you encourage locally made vehicles, Nigerians will continue to patronize their own products. Nigeria will begin to be proud of their own products. They will get to know that like now we have what is called Innocent Motors. These Innocent Motors have been doing well in Nigeria. If they are encouraged, and they will be in the big business, and this vehicle can also be exported out of Nigeria. I agree with you that sometimes some few people like things that come from outside, but it's because we have not changed the attitude. If we change the attitude, I can tell you that with time, this will all go. Let's be hopeful that we will patronize our product.
Abdul Razak Namdas is a Nigerian lawmaker and spokesman for the House of Representatives. He spoke with me from Abuja.
The spokesman for the Malawian Opposition People's Party has dismissed reports of President Joyce Banda plans to return to the country in March. Local media reports say two officials of the opposition party confirmed the former president plans to return home as the government prepares her retirement home. But parliamentarian Noah Chimpeni, who is also the party spokesman, says the former president has yet to schedule any trip to return home. For more, I reached the opposition People's Party spokesman Noah Chimpeni in the capital Lilongwe.
Yes, you are right that I'll be the best person to know that as you are saying that you are hearing reports, those are just reports which are not true. You know, Malawi is her. This is her country. She's free to come anytime. She's never running away from anything. But as of now, she hasn't told us that she's coming back home on such a day. When she does so, when she's ready to come, she will let me know, and I will inform the nation and post the world at large that Dr. Joyce Banda is coming home on such a day. But as of now, those are just reports, just like any other report. It's not true at the moment.
The Government Anti-Corruption Bureau says they couldn't find anything to link her to the alleged corruption that she is believed to have been part of or which occurred under her, the cash gate. Now, as a political party, what was your reaction when this announcement was made?
We are very cool because we knew already that she never did anything wrong. If she did anything wrong, then would have been, maybe would have been excited or whatever. But we knew from the way it goes that whatever was being said was just political. She never did anything. Nobody had any evidence against her to incriminate her. It was just a few individuals who mentioned her name in court. Maybe they were doing those things in her name without her knowing. Therefore, they thought that by mentioning the former head of state, therefore they will save their necks and depreciate their former head of state. But whatever the Anti-Corruption Bureau said is what we already knew. So therefore, there was nothing new there.
Some supporters of the party are saying that they are still concerned that she could possibly be arrested if she comes up, because if there has been a politically motivated accusation against her, something similar could happen again to her when she returns. What is your take on that?
My take is that members are concerned because they love her, but herself, she's not concerned. She has been talking to me. She's never concerned because she never did anything wrong. So when she comes home, if anybody, the government try to arrest her, people will know that they are doing that just on their own political grounds. But as of now, we are not worried because we know that she never did anything wrong. Any sensible government would not even try to begin thinking to arrest her.
If she returns, will she campaign for the party ahead of the election? Because I hear your party, since she left, has been struggling, and that even the MCP, the biggest opposition party, could be making inroads. But with her intervention, your party could make some significant gains. What do you say to such assessment?
Yeah, you are very right. But once she returns, the political landscape will totally change, because her People's Party is a very big party that's got grassroots structures. Those who have left are mainly those who are in leadership position, but the party on the ground is very intact. So when she comes, obviously the political wind, there will be a lot of political winds in Malawi. Things will definitely change. But she hasn't said anything whether she's coming, and when she comes, she'll campaign or not. She will let us know when she comes, or before she comes, she'll let us know what her plans are.
Noah Chimpeni is the spokesman for the Malawian Opposition People's Party. He spoke with me from Lilongwe. The Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila arrived in the Zambian capital Lusaka Saturday for bilateral talks with President Edgar Lungu. Expected issues the two leaders will address include trade, border control, and the refugee situation, among others. But opposition and civil society groups have condemned President Lungu for hosting Kabila, saying the Congolese leader is a dictator who has overstayed his constitutional mandate and should not be hosted by a Zambian leader. For analysis, I reached Zambian independent journalist Richard Mulonga in Lusaka.
It is because of the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where Kabila has overstayed in power, and he has exhibited the tendencies of a dictator. And people are saying that even President Lungu is also exhibiting tendencies of a dictator, and is borrowing such characteristics from supposed dictators like Kabila himself, the former president of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, and the benevolent dictator of Rwanda, Kagame. So the critics, those who are antagonistic about that visit, are saying, show me your friends and I will show you my character.
Well, but Richard, both countries have bilateral and diplomatic relations. That is what heads of state and government do. What is so abhorrent about that?
What I've said is that the people are looking at this from the other side. Why not, for instance, associate with the other good presidents of Namibia, of Angola, and other countries that Zambia can borrow from in terms of transparency and accountability, in terms of good governance, and in terms of showing this love for people, instead of... Because if you look at the situation in the Congo, Kabila has overstayed. And in Zambia here, people are also talking about President Lungu and his eligibility to either contest or not contest the 2021 elections. So they are saying that President Lungu is probably mobilizing himself to contest the 2021 elections when he's not eligible, and he's trying to borrow the tricks from the likes of Kabila in order to do that.
Some of his supporters are saying President Lungu has not sought to amend the constitution so he could seek additional terms in office, and that a court will soon decide whether he is eligible or not. Although senior officials of the Patriotic Front and President Lungu himself said that he is qualified to run.
There is this separation of powers from the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. But if you see, in the last 6 years, the judiciary in Zambia has been under a lot of intense pressure, especially now when it is about to decide the eligibility of the president to contest the 2021 elections. A lot of mud slinging, and a lot of all these bad things have been accused at the constitutional members of the constitutional court. And that is meant to put the judiciary into disarray and to disorient them from making a rational decision on the matter and the eligibility of the president. So it is basically politicizing the judiciary and putting pressure on the judges instead of looking at matters from a perspective that is illegal, from a perspective that is indeed in public interest, because this is a highly political issue, and everyone else is mobilizing towards the election in 2021. And it is very early, and you can see the pressure that, you know, the, for example, the ruling party is putting on the judiciary to be able to pass a judgment or a decision that is favorable to them.
Now, I've heard some supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front saying that along the Zambian border with DRC, those who live there are the same ethnic group that live on the side of the DRC. So it's very common to see the two leaders meeting to have a smooth bilateral relations and to protect a common border that they both share.
Yes, there's a big problem on the border between Zambia and the DRC with regard to refugees. There's a big refugee camp just on the, you know, edges of the DRC border here. And the, at the crescendo of this problem, these two presidents did not meet. Now that this problem has been resolved, and the partners such as the United Nations, NGOs, the church, and other multilateral and bilateral partners have put in support, and the situation has somehow stabilized. We have more than 8,000 refugees in there. When the problem was bigger, when it needed the two presidents to meet urgently and discuss, they didn't. Why should they meet now when the political situation, the refugee crisis, the humanitarian situation has stabilized? So it is about timing. Maybe the timing that they're meeting is wrong. Because here in Zambia, they're talking about the legitimacy of the president. And then in the DR Congo, they're also talking about Kabila should go, but he's staying on in power. Why meet at this time? Why didn't they meet about these humanitarian matters when it matters the most?
Richard Mulonga is a Zambian independent journalist. He spoke with me from Lusaka. It's been almost 3 days since news broke out the death of Zimbabwean main opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai. He was 65 and lost his battle with colon cancer. At the time of his death, he had been receiving medical treatment in neighboring South Africa. Zimbabweans have been in mourning since. For VOA reporter Kutsaye Zvanavashi has more details.
Hundreds of people have gathered today in Harare Central Business District to pray and celebrate the life and legacy of Tsvangirai. Joelson Mugari is the chairman of United Citizen Alliance, the organization that has organized this gathering.
We find it very necessary today as citizens to give ourselves time to pray for the late President Morgan Richard Tsvangirai.
Mugari says the crowd present came from various religious, political and business backgrounds and just ordinary citizens. He says they will be mobilizing people to go to Tsvangirai's burial. Auxilia Mahachi is a councillor in Harare Central Ward 2 for the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC Party. She was part of the prayers celebrating Tsvangirai's life and now mourning his passing. She says it's the pain of loss that has brought her to this gathering to pray for her hero. We should continue to accompany him with prayer. He fought a great fight. The death of Morgan Tsvangirai has pained us deeply. Manasseh Tsvangirai is the brother to the deceased. He addressed members of the press today and expressed concerns over the widespread but false news about his brother's burial arrangements. He set the record straight.
The program starts today, Saturday. We are informed with our collaborators in South Africa that the board will arrive in Harare 1625 hours at Harare International Airport.
Tsvangirai's body had not been confirmed to have arrived by the time of filing this report. Manasseh adds more details on where Tsvangirai would be buried.
The board will leave from Harare around 20 hours today. There will be a church service here by the Methodist priest. Tomorrow, Sunday, being the day 2, the board will leave Dove's funeral parlor to Maborane Methodist Church. There will be a church service.
He says afterward, Tsvangirai's body will pass through MDC Party headquarters for a moment of silence. He will be rerouted to his residential home in Harare. The following day, Monday, he will be taken to Freedom Square along the way to his rural home in Buhera. There, he will lie in rest until his burial scheduled for Tuesday afternoon. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Ethiopian opposition reacted cautiously on Friday, a day after the surprise resignation of the prime minister, saying there's no real change since the ruling party remains in power. Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn resigned on Thursday, following weeks of anti-government demonstrations and growing splits within the country's ruling Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, or EPRDF, coalition. A state of emergency has since been declared, the country's second since 2016. Mohamed Ademo is the co-founder and editor at opride.com. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in Washington for his reaction on the development in Ethiopia.
But let me just say that what a week in Ethiopia, what a week. And I say that because the government released hundreds of political prisoners, prominent journalists and religious leaders. And that was seen as a turning point, as a watershed moment. And we just got hit with another shocking announcement, even for Ethiopian watchers like me who wake up every day and look at the news from that country, information from that country. The timing of this announcement was shocking. Haile Mariam is largely seen as powerless placeholder. He was slated to go away. Everybody knew that he's on his way out, but nobody expected that it will come today. And what precipitated this moment and speeded up the process for his departure is really what we've seen on the streets earlier this week, where protesters in the Oromia region virtually shut down every major highway going into the capital, Addis Ababa, which essentially crippled the economy. Mind you, Addis Ababa is at the heart of Oromia region, and it is the center of government. And if nothing, no goods and people are moving in and out of Addis Ababa, the country is in a standstill. And the government realized that they have lost control of the streets and they needed to make this change to make sure that they can reassert some kind of control over the country.
Does Haile Mariam's departure mean anything in the structure of government, or maybe it's just as you said, he was just a placeholder and it's gone and then the power center has remained the same?
I don't mean to minimize the importance of his resignation, but what is most important, in my opinion, is what comes next. The Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, the party that has been in power since 1991, has been locked in a bitter power struggle over the last 2 years and a half. And that power struggle has played into the public. And some of the leaders of EPRDF, the party I just described, have embraced the protesters' demands and they want to reform, real, genuine reforms. There are some who are stuck in the past and are still on the way, standing on the way of reform. So more than Haile Mariam's resignation, I think we should be watching who his successor is going to be, how the power struggle is going to play out in the next couple of days.
The opposition had been brought down to its knees because of arrests and exile and all that. Do you see the opposition coming up and having a say in the new arrangement?
I think they have to be included. I think the government has been in power for too long. There is a fatigue, there is a trust deficit, and people are reluctant to trust everything the government says. They have to prove it. And one way to prove it is by talking to opposition leaders who have such overwhelming support across the country. And I think if we are seeking unity, if we are seeking national consensus, if we are trying to widen the democratic space, as the government says, the government has been saying these things, if that is really the ultimate goal here, and they want to ensure that their legacy doesn't, the legacy of this government, the ruling party, doesn't go down the drain, I think they must talk to the opposition. And the opposition has already signaled that they are ready to sit down and chart a future that is good for all Ethiopians, despite their ethnic differences, despite their religious differences, despite their socio-economic differences. A future for all, an Ethiopia that is at peace with itself, in an Ethiopia that can maintain its internal cohesion and play a leadership role at the continent level. I think for that kind of transition, we need an all-inclusive dialogue. And of course, I think the first signal the government can send to the public and to the people of Ethiopia is by choosing a successor that is not from the old guard, someone who is not from the military, someone who is not from the intelligence. These sectors have ruined everything this government has accomplished by reverting to repressive measures. I think if they do that, they stand to benefit from it. They can rewrite their legacy, and it certainly puts Ethiopia on a stronger footing going forward, economically, politically, diplomatically.
Mohammed Ademo is the co-founder and editor at opride.com. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Washington. And right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Moyo wangu, taratibu itazoea. Chineke nemego kwa ngwenye zege. Every day by day I just dey celebrate oh. Everything I do we just dey penetrate oh. I just want to say oh thank you Jehovah. See I'm living large, I get angels for my ghetto. Never forget where I come from, not from ghetto. No 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 no. I just want to say oh thank you Jehovah. Pure Kennedy, what you go father father. One bele bello. I call you if I follow one day you must quit it. See I come from east the enter street brother you know. Hey Jimmy there I turn to beast you already know. Hey man oh now yellow moon don't get fe yefe. Oh now yellow me don't get to ya oh. Hey man I need a pop balloon but don't get se hese. I saw a balloon but don't get ko ya oh. So I'm the conqueror. My love for them just a wonder. So wish come up on your under. I fire them with the thunder. You wanna cause it one who do wanna no no. Man no chill. I cover myself. My cartoon I can never go bang when you say. Every day by day I just they celebrate. Everything I do we just they penetrate. I just want to say oh, thank you Jehovah. I'm living large, I get angels for my ghetto. Never forget where I come from, not from ghetto. Oh no 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 no. I just want to say oh, thank you to God. Pure Kennedy, what you go father father eh? Father father eh? Adekwa Muloya no father father. You know easy to the jury governor Abode. Now father because the governor he be to me. Since I lost my daddy now he don't adopt to me. I say gone are the days, the days when no who they argue me. You write about now all the chicks they chick on me. I stand to your back on the chamber. Every day by day, I just they celebrate. Oh. Everything I do, we just they penetrate. Oh. I just want to say oh, thank you to God. See, I'm living large, I get angels for my ghetto. Never forget where I come from, not from ghetto. Oh, no, 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 no. I just want to say oh, thank you to God. Kennedy, what you go father, father, eh? Father, father, eh? Adekwa Muloya, no father, father, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Father, father, eh?
Semeka Fibo Enna, oh, no. Otumba Kala Fibo Enna, oh, no. Obo Fetchiku Neke, okay, say, Basu, Buru Buru, if I over, oh, no. When you open, oh, no, no.
Follow you, paparazzi follow you,
cause I'm in love with you. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. Are you done talking? Tell me, baby, are you done talking? Yeah. I don't wanna be a player no more. Yeah, I don't wanna be a player no more. Cause my guys call me Cristiano, Mr. Ronaldo, I'm on Nintendo. Cause my guys call me Cristiano, Mr. Ronaldo, I'm on Nintendo. Money fall on you, banana fall on you, Prada fall on you. I'm in love with you. Money fall on you.
Sorry for cutting into the music. We have some news here. Sierra Leoneans go to the polls on March 7 to elect a new president, parliamentarians and local representatives. The Electoral Commission says it is ready to administer credible, free and fair elections. The ruling APC party has come under criticisms from opposition and civil society groups for failing to improve the living conditions of Sierra Leoneans. For reaction, Mohamed Chenoba, Deputy Speaker of Parliament and running mate of the APC presidential candidate Dr. Samura Kamara, joins me live via telephone link up. Good afternoon, Mr. Ba.
Good afternoon. Sorry again, my name is Cherno Majuba, not Mohamed Chenoba.
Okay, Chenoba. Okay, right. Mr. Ba, let me ask you, how is your campaign going so far following criticisms that your party has failed to improve the living conditions of Sierra Leoneans?
Thank you very much. I'll assure you that the campaign is going very well. The people are receptive. They have seen the development and they appreciate it. The criticism you're just referring to from some Sierra Leoneans, it can't be Sierra Leoneans. And further to that as well, it can't be civil society. There might be civil opposition members in the cloth moving around on Parisian civil society. But the civil society that we know that is credible has been very, very supportive and they're appreciative of what we're doing. Yes, we know there are challenges. We are not there yet, and that is something we've accepted. But for the last 10 years, what we've done is second to none. And since independence has never happened, going forward, we're going to continue improving the lives of Sierra Leoneans. So I'll tell you for sure that the campaign is going well. But most importantly, definitely a bulk chunk of the population is appreciative of what we've done, and they still have trust and confidence in us moving forward.
Mr. Ba, let me ask you, what makes you believe that Sierra Leoneans will repose confidence in the APC and retain you in power? Because there have been criticisms. You have about 6, 7, or 8 presidential candidates. All of them say that the government of President Ernest Bai Koroma, who will be leaving power soon, has failed the people of Sierra Leone. Why should they have confidence in the APC to deliver?
The question as to why they should have confidence, I repeat again, they still have confidence. It's not a question about why should they have confidence. Those other 5 candidates who took part in the debate you're referring to are opposition. They're there to oppose and they will continue to oppose. But we're encouraging them and all of the Sierra Leoneans to be constructive in their criticism. They have failed to accept the gains that have been made during the last 10 years. And these gains are visible. They are not things that are in space. They are down here. There is more water available today than 10 years ago, more electricity, more roads, more access to education. Everything else is in the increase. Everything else. More better systems, institutions are more guarded. The Anti-Corruption Commission has been capacitated. They have more autonomy. They can charge on their own. These were things that did not happen before the last 10 years. All of these have happened under the transformative leadership of Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma, of which Dr. Samura Kamara was part of. Knowing all what transpired, wherever there have been little mistakes, wherever there have been challenges, I'm sure he is the most appropriate person to step in today and ensure that those mistakes and errors are corrected, in ensuring that we increase and expedite the rapid pace within which we are developing. All others are just coming from outside. They have little or no experience. And you don't expect somebody without any experience to start from the leadership at the top. We expect people to start from bottom.
So let me ask you this. How credible do you think these elections will be? And does the Electoral Commission have the money that it needs to administer this election? And will you accept the outcome of the result if it doesn't go your way?
As a party, we've always done that. We've always supported the democratic process, and we will continue to support the democratic process. We are looking forward to a free, fair, and transparent election that will be peaceful, because without peace, development is far-fetched. And we have been supporting the peaceful transformation of everything that has been happening. But beyond that, let me go back to the other part of the question which you just asked. Yes, as a party, we'll support all what is democratic, and we'll continue to move towards that direction.
So let me ask you this. I'm sure you are aware that one of the accusations against the APC is that it's a thuggish party. They empower their supporters to attack other opponents, among other nefarious activities associated with the party. How do you change this narrative, and will you encourage your supporters to eschew violence ahead of the elections?
That is a shame also from those who are making those assertions. President Tijan Kabao of blessed memory, the late, ensured that peace was brought to Sierra Leone in 2002 officially. But we've enjoyed more peace between 2007 to date than at any other time again in the history of this country. Political tolerance, religious tolerance, everything has been in the increase. And you yourself, I'm sure, will confirm that the United Nations has continued to use us as a very good model in a post-war state. Yeah, political intimidation is zero. Political prisoners are zero. Nobody has been intimidated for politics. And that is what we're going to continue to maintain. And I want to assure that as a party, we are peaceful, and we'll continue to be peaceful. The journalists have their space. They're using it freely. People have said what they want to say. And but we expect them to continue to do it in a responsible manner. But for sure, they have never been intimidated. As I speak to you, I am in Kukuna, a place that used to be a stronghold of the SLPP. Everybody is excited. Children are fighting for our souvenirs. Elders are fighting for our souvenirs. But the opposition will tell you we're giving people money for our T-shirt. Our T-shirts are so scarce. Everybody wants them.
So
it just shows how peaceful we've been. Everybody wants to associate themselves with the APC because we represent peace and development.
So, Mr. Majuba, what should Sierra Leoneans expect from your party? How do you intend improving their living conditions? How do you ensure they are protected and the territorial integrity of Sierra Leone is maintained?
As I said, what we've done between 2007 to date is to enhance and build on our democracy. We've maintained peace and ensured that, to a larger extent, we have and continue to develop the lives of many, many Sierra Leoneans. That is something we'll continue to do. They believe in us, and you can see it. I wish you'll have time to visit Sierra Leone. What you will see will be a complete contrast from what you hear on your end. What people hear most times is based on what the social media says. But when you come on the ground, you will see a different environment. I want to assure them that what President Nkrumah has done, he's done his bit. He's done a lot, and he's done well. But Dr. Samora Kamara's presidency will do and double what President Nkrumah has done, because he's been part of the system long before now. He has the experience, both local and international, and he's a man full of integrity and respect for others. He has sympathy. When you go to where he comes from, you'll see what he's done. You'll know whether he's a man who supports development or not. Others, go where they come from. You'll also know whether they support development or not. He says, show me your friend and I'll tell you who you are. Show me what you've done, and I will tell you what I'm sure you can do in the future. Amongst the lot, Dr. Samora Kamara is the best. I'll continue to reiterate that.
Talking about him being the best, following last Thursday's presidential election, negative remarks have been, you know, hurled against him that he was poor during the presidential debate, and that is why they are saying people should not vote for him. What percentage or what grade will you give your presidential candidate, and do you think that his performance could have an impact on who votes for the APC, your ticket, ahead of the election.
I'm surprised where you got that information from, if at all you do have it. But as you said, you have it. But I'll tell you that the entire world, not just Sierra Leone, accepted that Dr. Samuel Akamau was not just on top of the debate, but he was far ahead of all the others put together. He was calm, spoke within time, spoke to issues, and with facts as well. Very, very calm. Whilst others were bungling, making promises, they don't know whether they could fulfill or not because they've never had the experience before, or referring or quoting figures that when you put them together could not add. He was precise and knew exactly what he was talking. And all what I have seen, wherever I have gone, those that I've heard from, both within and outside of Sierra Leone, confirmed that Dr. Samuel Akamau proved on that particular day that he was the best. And I'll tell you for sure, I have many friends from the opposition in and out of Sierra Leone. All of them called to congratulate me, to say, wow, the man is on top. He knows his stuff. We're happy that he doesn't talk too much. We believe that if given the opportunity, he will deliver. And most of them as opposition members promised to make sure that they move and support him as far as the presidency is concerned.
Thank you very much. That was Chendo Majuba, the Sierra Leonean Deputy Speaker of Parliament and running mate of Samora Kamara. He spoke with me from Kukunam. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America, and from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, giant silk cutting trees grow out of very tiny seeds. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early February, the United States imposed restrictions on the export of defense articles and defense services into South Sudan. The United States does not directly sell arms to South Sudan, but the ban will prevent any U.S. company or citizen from providing military equipment or defense services to the warring factions. Exports of weapons and ammunition into South Sudan undercut efforts to protect civilians, and prohibiting the sale or transfer of arms pressures the government of South Sudan and the armed opposition to implement the December 21st cessation of hostilities and start to end the trauma and displacement that millions of innocent South Sudanese have suffered. South Sudan gained its independence from Sudan in 2011. Peace lasted less than 18 months. In December 2013, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar erupted into civil war. The warring parties agreed to a peace accord in 2015 and to ceasefires on a number of occasions. All were broken before the ink was dry on the agreement. The continued fighting has cost the lives of thousands of people and led to a cutback in oil production, a devastated economy, human rights abuses, hunger, and malnutrition. The United States is appalled by the continuing violence in South Sudan that has created one of Africa's worst humanitarian crises, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. 1.5 million people are now on the brink of famine, despite enormous efforts by the United States and other donors since the conflict began in 2013 to stave off famine and save lives, she said. We urge all countries, including South Sudan's neighbors, to promote peace and save innocent lives by cutting off the flow of defense articles and defense services to South Sudan and to halt support to actors who are working to destabilize the country. We encourage the Intergovernmental Authority on Development and the African Union to consider sanctions measures against those who undermine the peace process. Additionally, the United States is seeking support for a UN Security Council embargo on all arms flows into South Sudan, and we urge all UN Security Council members to join us in supporting this action. The message must be clear. The United States, the region, and the international community will not stand idly by as innocent South Sudanese civilians.
From Washington, this is V.